Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. So glad that you are continuing to spend your evening with us, and let me just mention a couple things right up front here before I dig into my experiences in Philadelphia. Number one, well, yes, it's October. It is the absolute perfect time to take one of our haunted Asheville ghost tours. The classic ghost tour, or the haunted pub crawl, or the vampire and occult tour. We even have a special arrangement we have made with Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Biltmore Village to do a Halloween Biltmore Village tour. They've put together a package where you get to go to Ruth's Chris, and it's going to be all Halloween-y with special dishes they prepared and all the dry ice and misty things seething around, and people are going to be in costume, and you get to go there with this package and have a fine meal, and then you get to go on a ghost tour. We have so much cool stuff. Go to hauntedasheville.com if you want to learn more about the fun things that you can do with us. We are the original, the oldest, the finest. And I wrote my book, Haunted Asheville, about 20-some years ago. There were no other books of Asheville ghost stories out there. And now, Asheville's world-class destination for ghost hunting. HauntedAsheville.com has got that info. Secondly, if you are the type of person who wants to go to a Halloween party and just blow everybody away, well, I have a brand new wand that is for sale. And this is a wand that was created by me and my little staff right here in the Bermuda Triangle. It's called the Dracula Wand.
The Dracula Wand.
It looks so cool. It's a black rubberized wand, and on the end it has a glass bulb with a little kind of red wooden stake in the middle, and it's surrounded by actual rubble from the actual castle of the real Dracula, Vlad the Impaler. The castle Poenari, as you may or may not know, I co-led an expedition there to Transylvania in 2012. Investigator Shelley Wright was on that expedition and had some crazy experiences. And I have a very small, limited run of these wands. And so if you can get one of these, let me put it this way. If you want one, especially if you want it shipped to you in time for Halloween, you better do that now. You better make the purchase. Go to joshuapwarren.com. Right now, you can get the wand and a nice little carrying pouch with a certificate signed by me, all that for $99.95. So just go to joshuapwarren.com. Check that thing out. Okay, so here we are talking about me moving on in my adventures from Michigan to Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. I had a big book signing there for my new book, which became an Amazon bestseller, called Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction. If you've listened to this show for a while, you're familiar with the book. And so I arrived at Barnes & Noble, and let me tell you, from the moment I walked in the door to the moment I left, there were people there just coming up from every angle, wanting to talk to me, wanting to discuss the Force. I mean, it was a huge success. I've posted some pictures of this on the Facebook page and maybe the Twitter page I've got there. And I'm telling you, people were just so kind, so warm, so loving, so welcoming. I did get some weird moments, though. As a matter of fact, Lauren and I were there, and we were joined by filmmaker C. Eric Scott. And C. Eric Scott and Lauren were kind of like, you know, hovering around the sides. And I was saying, like, keep an eye out in case things get too weird. I might need some backup. Here's some protection. One guy actually came up to me, Sam, and he said, "What are you doing tonight after the book signing?" And I told him, "Well, I have some other interviews I have to do while I'm here in town." And he says, "Because I would like to hook your brain up to electrodes."
Now, knowing you, I would think that, A, you might be a little creeped out, but also, conversely, that you would be intrigued.
Oh, I no. He is the one that likes to do the hooking up of somebody else's brain. I've been there.
Yeah, Shelley has had her brain hooked up, as documented by Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
On the Blu-ray bonuses for the horror film The Apparition, or as some call it, The Aspiration.
I'll have to get a copy of that.
On the Blu-ray edition.
Yeah, because it stars Ashley Green. Who is, Ashley, I got to hang out with Ashley Green on the movie set in Los Angeles. And it's funny because there was a movie that came out recently. Gosh, the name escapes me. It was like Staten Island Summer or something like that. And she is, you know, like the hot chick. And they put her on the cover. And it's so weird that I got to hang out in person with a sex symbol. And
you get to hang out with me in the studio every time you're here.
Well, that's the closest I get to that usually, but maybe I feel like I'm getting old, Sam, because here I am hanging out on the set with this sex symbol, and she just looks like a kid to me, you know?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that the other day when you were, gosh, it was when it first came out, and you were talking about how, you know, it was just like she was a kid, and you were talking about how tall she was, and oh my gosh, she's so short, and I'm like,
Hey, Shelley, well, we don't want to offend Ashley Green out there.
No, what I was saying was she's the same height that I am.
Oh, okay. Well, you have the big hair, though, remember?
Yeah.
That adds like another four or five inches. Ashley Green was great. She was a wonderful person, and it was a great experience, and everybody had fun. But, yeah, so anyway, so this guy, he has some kind of company where apparently he monitors brainwave patterns. And I would have enjoyed doing that, but I don't like the idea of just going to a stranger's office or house or whatever it is. And the next thing you know, I am in a news story running down the street butt naked with handcuffs and a dog collar, you know, screaming for help because I've been abducted into this man's creepy sex dungeon. I'm sure that – how I connected those dots, Sam? That perfect logical sense, right?
It was almost like 7 degrees of bacon, except just completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
but there was another guy who came up to me, and Shelley, you would have really enjoyed this guy. This guy came up to me and told me that he was from Romania, and he looked just like Dracula, and he talked just like Dracula. And he was one of those guys who would, like, really get up close to you, you know, when he was talking to you.
Close talker.
Yeah. And he came up and he goes, "This book is an absolute masterpiece." And I was like, "Oh, well, thank you so much." And the count. and then he goes, "But I have condensed it down to the most meaningful part. You captured the essence of everything. Would you like to see it?" And I said, "Sure." So he opens his copy of Use the Force, and there he has written three numbers. 1, 2, 5. Okay? See, he really was the count. He goes, 1, 2, 5. And I look at 1, 2, 5, and I say, "What is 1, 2, 5? And he takes his book, and he then turns and opens it to page 125, where with a big yellow highlighter, he had highlighted one sentence and just made like bullseye concentric circles around it. And the most important thing that he got out of this book that condensed it all down to him was this sentence. I'm looking at my copy of Use the Force right now. The center, the target of his bullseye was this sentence, quote, "Say I love you
to the universe as often as possible. So whether or not that rattles you and shakes you on a fundamental level, that is what really did it for him. 1, 2, 5. So anyway, point is, had a great experience there at the book signing, sold a lot of books. They even came up to me at the bookstore and said, we have people who couldn't be here but wanted to see if you would sign a book so we could ship it to them. So that was pretty cool. And so from there, of course, I went on and I explored Philadelphia. Now, this is the first time I'd really gotten to spend some, you know, boots on the ground time in Philadelphia. I've always wanted to do that because I'm a history buff. And, you know, again, this was the capital of the United States for a while. This is where the Constitution was developed, where the Declaration was signed.
Where Rocky ran the stairs.
Absolutely. How can you go wrong? And, you know, I would say, though, honestly, if I had to summarize Philadelphia in one sentence, I would say it was like New York with less people and shorter buildings.
Yeah, I would say like New York, less people and cooler.
I enjoyed it. I'll tell you that. I the people there really were very, very nice to me. And it's weird because before I went there, I had folks who would come up to me and be like, hey, you're going to Philly. Yeah, city of brotherly love. Mike took us. You know, like they were preparing me to go there and have everybody, you know, give me the cold shoulder. But it really did live up to my expectations. I mean, I went there and everybody was super nice. We had a great experience. So anyway, yes, I saw the Liberty Bell. It's kind of funny because nowadays you can't even see the Liberty Bell without them searching you. You know, they you go through security before you can go see the Liberty Bell. I wasn't expecting that. And then I went to Independence Hall. Now, Independence Hall, this is the building that has the room where the founders of the country sat around and developed the Declaration of Independence and signed it. And what's so funny is that we think of that as a celebratory thing. But for the guys who were actually there and did this, it was not celebratory at all. They were very, very worried. They were stressed out when they said, you know, we're staking our fortunes, our lives, our, you know, our honor. They were serious. They knew that, you know, as Benjamin Franklin said, we better all stick together or we're going to hang separately. We got to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you sort of what it felt like to be there at Independence Hall, to stand in the room where this occurred. And then, yes, we'll move on to what Sam has just been jonesing to hear about. Turns out Sam and I are both cheesesteak aficionados, and I decided to get to the bottom of the best Philly cheesesteak, and I'm going to tell you what I came up with when we return. It's the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the downright weird, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
So you think you can tell? Heaven from hell.
I used to be a rolling stone, you know. If a cause was right, to find an answer on the road. I used to be a heart beating for someone, but the times have changed. The less I say, the more my work gets done. 'Cause I live. Give me a piece of mind, my daddy never had.
Yeah, it's the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's program is presented by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And, you know, you should call Wright's Coin Shop. Write this number down, 828-298-5402. The holidays are practically here. Don't wait till the last minute. You know how that goes. 828-298-5402. They're at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road, not far from Biltmore Village. And as I mentioned, we're going to be doing a little special Biltmore Village Halloween tour on October 31st with in conjunction with Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. So we're talking about my trip to Philadelphia. And by the way, when I went to Philadelphia, I had no idea that the Pope was going to be coming to Philadelphia soon. I mean, Philadelphia has been all over the news lately. I actually took a picture of myself with a big cardboard cutout of the Pope, and I think what I might do is just post that thing somewhere on Facebook or whatever and see if people can tell it's me in a cardboard cutout. If you listen to the show, well, you'll know, but we'll see if I can fool other people. I don't know if I want to do that or not. Is that too cheesy for a guy like me to do, Sam?
No, you got to have a little lightness. You can't always be the Wizard of Weird. Sometimes you got to be the pontiff of the pontiff of the paranormal.
Woo! That I got to use that somewhere. I want to offend as many people as possible.
Another T-shirt idea.
So, you know, if you've never made it to Philadelphia and gone to Independence Hall, you should definitely try to do that at some point in your life, if you're into history at all. Because, you know, I have a very deeply rooted belief that the United States is a great country that was formed in order to bring a new mindset to the rest of the world.
I thought it was formed in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, and ensure domestic tranquility.
It was in order to show that all people are supposedly created equal. It took us a while to get to that point. Okay, 150 years ago, we had slaves in this country. Less than 100 years ago, women could not vote. 50 years ago, there was still legal racial segregation. We are making progress. Thank goodness we are making progress. So that's why I'm not a doom and gloomer. And when you go into the Independence Hall, well, for one thing, you have to buy a ticket. It's like a dollar or something like that. But you better reserve it because you might get there and it'll be sold out. And a Park Service ranger takes you in as a group and gives you a very limited amount of time and tells you, you know, like a tour guide, what you're looking at. And we had a really good ranger who was very knowledgeable. So as soon as you walk into this building, you know how I'm assuming most of you listening to this program have at one point or another gone into like a really old log cabin, one that was built in the 1800s. It has that truly kind of rich old wood smell. Well, that's what you smell when you step into this building. I mean, it smells like, you know, you have traveled back in time. And I wish I could tell you that when I went into the room where the declaration was signed and I saw the tables and the quills, I wish I could tell you that I saw an apparition or, you know, something magical happen. None of that did. But boy, I can tell you what, the feeling in there was special to me. It really did feel like there was still a great deal of tension in that room. It didn't feel like relaxation, which is very much in line with what historians will tell you. As I mentioned before the break, these guys, they didn't, you know, sign this thing and then like high five each other. I mean, they signed it and they said, "Oh crap, did we just sign our own death warrants?" And then from there, years of horrific violence ensued, and they saw a lot of their friends and family die. So talk about a haunted place. But there was a certain tingle on the flesh being in that room. And it was very, very impactful for me. I really enjoyed having that experience. But that said, I know what you're really thinking, Sam.
That you were actually role-playing Nicolas Cage in National Treasure the whole time that you were there? And you were like, up there in the bell tower.
What you're thinking, Sam, the animal, is what's my favorite cheesesteak?
All right. Let's get down to it. Where you tried 10 in 5 days.
Okay, well, let me start by saying that I have been a lover of cheesesteaks as long as I can remember.
And tube steaks.
And I have traveled all over the country and to other countries, and I'm not tube steaks, that's a different ballgame. But I always ask for a cheesesteak wherever I go. If they have it on the menu, fine. If not, I will ask people to make one just for
me. And you'll find that more often than not, if a place has it on the menu, it's not really a cheesesteak, and it's not really that good, typically. You know?
Unfortunately, it is very easy to screw up a cheesesteak. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you how I like my cheesesteaks, and we'll see if it's how you like yours.
Okay.
My perfect cheesesteak, first off, it's on a really nice, soft, fresh bun.
Yep.
Secondly, I like the meat to be very finely diced up.
I mean, it's got to be very thinly sliced and then kind of chopped up, you know?
I prefer it more diced than sliced, but either way, it's got to be.
Well, they slice it first.
They slice it, and then but some of them just slice it, and that's it. And they don't dice it.
Right.
I like it sliced and diced.
I would agree.
I like the meat to be very well seasoned.
Yes.
I enjoy some mushrooms. I like some peppers
in
there.
This is where we vary. I am a purist. I want meat and cheese and bun.
That's it. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I can appreciate that, but if you know, for my perfect cheesesteak has some mushrooms and has some peppers and maybe some onions, depending on you know.
I think the biggest question when you talk to people about cheesesteaks is American provolone or cheese whiz.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Philadelphia, it's common for everybody to use cheese whiz, but they will give you the option. And for one thing, cheese whiz is fine with me. I love cheese whiz, but I also enjoy provolone cheese.
The uninitiated think they hear cheese whiz, and they're like, ooh, gross. And it's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Is you know, cheese whiz is the thing on a Philly. But really, as far as cheese is concerned, you can't go wrong with me. I'm a cheese lover. I'm an equal opportunity.
I don't like Swiss at all.
Okay, I didn't when I was a kid, but I do now. I mean, I love all cheeses now, even some of the like stinky cheeses. I don't remember what they're called, but I can even do stinky like stinky goat cheese.
Well, that's great. But we're about to hit the commercial. What's your favorite cheese steak?
Okay. Here's what I knew as a guy who has traveled everywhere demanding cheesesteaks, even when they're not on the menu. I've probably eaten more loogies than cheesesteaks, is what I'm saying. As a guy who has made cheesesteaks myself at home, so many variations of cheesesteaks. And not just beef, but also chicken. You know, I'm a big chicken Philly fan.
Let's not even go down that blasphemous road.
Okay, well, you know, I think they have their own nuances and their own good parts and bad parts. That said, I went there and I said, I'm getting to the bottom of this. By God, I'm going to eat every Philly that they tell me is good everywhere I go, and I'm going to take this seriously as hell. And yes, I went to Pat's, and yes, I went to Geno's. Of course I did. But when we come back from this break, I'm going to announce, I'm going to reveal to the world what I believe, in my personal opinion, is the best Philly cheesesteak. And, gosh, my mouth is watering right now. I wish I were back in Philly to celebrate.
Getting an 8x10 ready to send to them.
So when we come back, I'll tell you about that. Also, I'm going to dig into some of the other special things I got to see. And, yes, I'm leading up to going into what Some people call the most twisted and frightening museum in the country the Mutter Museum. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. Welcome back to the program where the unusual becomes usual. Hey, thanks for spending your evening with us. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this show is called Speaking of Strange, and it is presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville, North Carolina. And the holidays are coming up, so I implore you to call Wright's Coin Shop. Here's the number, 828-298-5402. Again, that number is 828-298-5402. They're at 1271 Sweeten Creek Road in Asheville. That's not too far from the Biltmore Estate. Okay, so I also want to, this is the Halloween season. Go to hauntedasheville.com if you're going to be in town and take one of the cool tours that I designed. Haunted Asheville. You get to go to the Asheville Mystery Museum, hauntedasheville.com. All right, Sam. We're both cheesesteak aficionados.
Waiting on bated breath. And also, you subscribe to Cheesesteak Aficionado magazine.
Well, you've convinced me, Sam. At first, when you said you were a cheesesteak aficionado, I wasn't sure if I believed that. Now, I think you've convinced me, and I think I've convinced you. Do we have mutual respect here? Mutual
I don't think you're pussyfooting around with your cheesesteak.
I guarantee you I'm not. All right. And by the way, that is the most appropriate way of putting it I've ever heard. I would say that let me just,
if we agree, this is going to be like, we don't know. For everybody listening, he hasn't told me.
No. Sam's been trying to get me to give it up during a break.
I've been trying to get you to give it up for a long time.
He's used to that. I do want to insert this one thing. There is a really, really cool Irish bar in Philadelphia called Moriarty's. And, yes, Moriarty was the villain in the Sherlock Holmes stories.
He was also the protagonist in On the Road.
Oh, you mean the what was his name? Who wrote with John On the Road?
Jack Kerouac, but it was the Neil Cassidy character, Dean Moriarty. I can't say.
Oh, okay. So if you go to Moriarty's, they have a pretty darn good Philly cheesesteak, and in addition to a vast selection of beverages and what they considered the best wings in Philadelphia. But having followed every lead, and I'm talking everything from, I can't even remember the names of some of the places that I went to now, but I will tell you that I was on this food expedition with Lauren and with C. Eric Scott. Now, the two of them did not eat as many as me, and they did not try out as many as me. But I will tell you that C. Eric Scott and I agree, and Lauren disagreed.
She did that on principle.
I think so, yes. But the important thing is what I think, and what I think is the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia can be bought at Jim's.
Yeah, we agree!
Oh, my.
Do we agree?
The world is going to end.
Woo! Jim's is the deal, is it not?
That is so awesome that you and I, having had no conversation, no experience, have actually taken this vast array of variables, and we actually have condensed
it. Add that to the list of weird things about a same age. Both have similar backgrounds in a lot of ways.
Yep.
Both terribly handsome.
Exactly.
Both agree on Jim's cheesesteaks on South Street.
Yep.
Good stuff. I almost went back and got, if not for the line, I was going to get another one and just try to do two because they were that good.
Yeah, they were absolutely amazing. And so, okay, what I can tell you is that you and I and C. Eric Scott agree. Come on, I don't even remember what Lauren liked. Who cares? If you and Eric and I agree, folks, it's settled. It's settled.
The one place, did you try out, what was the place? Jim's has it, and I was very tempted to get it. But there's a place that's known for their roast pork sandwich. Did you try that one out? I couldn't get myself to do it. Like, I wanted the cheese steaks. You know, that's what I was going with. But I'm
a little bit embarrassed because I'm a radio host and I'm supposed to have all these facts in front of me and I'm supposed to remember all the places that I went to and I can't. I remember them, but I can't remember the name of everyone because they all have
a guy's first name. It's like, you know, Pat, Gino, John, yeah. Like.
Let me put it this way. If I had as many cheesesteaks sticking out of me as were stuck in me, I would look like a porcupine. Does that go?
It's an analogy. Sure. I'll give you that. I won't say it's a good one, but it fits the bill of an analogy. Yeah.
I am so hungry right now.
Oh my goodness! Well, hey, so for those who are in Philadelphia, you know, if you didn't know, now you know. Not like, you know, I come into town and tell you what to do, but hey, this is a true outside objective perspective. Jim's cheesesteak's the best. I'm giving you the long distance virtual phantom high five because we have good taste, Sam.
I know this would have made a perfect episode of Mantiquing when we just independently agree. It's rare that we independently agree on lots of things.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, well, you know, speaking of, like, you and me doing a Mantiquing thing, one of my best friends, Dean Worsing, also showed up there in Philadelphia to spend a day with us.
Did I meet him at the speech, the thing that you gave at the temple?
He could not make it down there, but you would love Dean, and I think you might be a little bit jealous because Dean and I kind of have a little bromance going on, I think, you know.
Really?
He's going to listen to this and he's going to say, "Oh yeah, he's right." You know, we have I'll just leave it at that. So Dean and I have so much of a bromance that when he came into town and he showed us around, he took us to some Philly cheesesteak places. Dean actually gave me a cigar.
Is that a euphemism?
He gave me and Lauren and Eric a cigar, and we actually made a date, 10 years in the future, to get back together in Philadelphia and have a blowout, an extravaganza.
I had some delicious. Did you go to Chinatown at all?
I definitely went to China. I went to Chinatown, and I bought all kinds of weird stuff. And for the first time ever, I had Peking duck.
Oh, well, with the plum sauce and the crepes?
Yep, yep. Mm. And Chinatown there was seemed pretty realistic to me.
Yeah, like they got those tanks, like terrariums. You're like, oh, look at the turtles and the seahorses. And then and you're like, oh, you're picking that up to eat.
There's a lot of strange stuff in Chinatown.
I had some delicious noodles there.
A Peking duck kind of reminds me of, like, turkey jerky with, like, some sweet teriyaki sauce on it.
It shouldn't be that dry. If you have a proper Peking duck, it's going to be that skin is going to be super crisp, like, you know, super crisp, and the duck is going to be very succulent and juicy, not jerky-ish.
Well, what I had I would consider to be a little more jerky-ish.
A little dry.
So maybe I didn't have the best Peking duck.
Might be.
Yeah. Okay, so, gosh, so much that I could tell you about, but, hey, I got to go to...
Get to the Mütter Museum.
The Mütter Museum, exactly. Now, for those of you who are listening to this show and you've never heard of the Mütter Museum, it is officially a medical museum that was opened up in the 1800s. But when you go there, it's more like walking through a freak show, like a cabinet of curiosities, where you just get to see all kinds of bizarro stuff. Now, I want to emphasize here, this is not the first time I've been to this kind of place. The first time I went to a place that was like this was, gosh, it was probably like 15 years ago. I went to the Pathology Museum, which was at that time located at the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. And that museum had so many extreme, like, grotesque things. I actually have a friend who will remain nameless who practically fainted in there, literally, like, got nauseated and then almost fainted because he was just, like, overwhelmed by how gross and weird some of the stuff was on display. You know, you got your typical babies in jars and all that, but then you have things that just, like, defy. So, going to the Mütter Museum was it was a great experience. It was just fascinating on every level. And when we come back from this break, I'll tell you more about it. But I will say this before the break: I was amazed by how many people who were at the Mütter Museum were young, attractive women. Now, what does that tell you, Sam?
That young, attractive women like diseased penises and jars.
Pretty much, yeah. They like some weird, twisted, dark stuff. So, that said, we'll take a break. When we come back, I will tell you about some of the things that really stood out to me at the Mütter Museum, like Einstein's brain. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. I am Joshua P. Warren, and, well, keep in mind, Next hour is what we call the Dark 30 hour. Okay, now what that means is that we have moved deep into what is considered safe harbor, and we can talk about some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff in the media, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So you may or may not want to stick around for that. You have to determine if that's your cup of tea, but that's what we'll be digging into next hour. Now, we are going to get back to finally wrapping up this experience. What a journey. What a travel log this has been. I started in Michigan, now Philadelphia. You know, the Mutter Museum is one of those places that I know certain people just don't want to go. I have talked to those people, and they say, too much for me. Don't want to see deformed babies stuffed in jars.
Who are these people?
Don't want to see, you know, disgusting colons and, and yes, some twisted male members. That's true. It's, you know, that exists. I'll get to that. Maybe not. It's kind of self-explanatory. But when you go to the Mutter Museum, it is like stepping into a two-story Victorian cabinet of curiosities. The lighting is dim. There are glass cases everywhere, and it is so much to take in that, you know, you just can't read it all. You can't see it all. Let me just jump straight to the thing that stood out most for me. And, yes, there was a lot of, you know, disturbing stuff in there. But, hey, I really wanted to see Einstein's brain. And it was there in a big wooden case with a glass over the front. And what they have done is they've taken Einstein's brain and they have sliced it into slides like you would put into a microscope, right? So they have a bunch of these slides there. And you're standing there looking at these little thin, like onion skin thin slices of his brain. And there's a sign there that tells you that his brain is a little different than everybody else's. That you know, for one thing, was extremely healthy despite his age. And mind you, as a side note, I remember reading that Einstein always insisted on sleeping 10 hours per night. I personally believe that that makes an impact on your mental health, is how much you get.
Wasn't it Thomas Edison who would take lots of very tiny naps throughout the day, right?
Yeah, napping is good as well.
He would not sleep at all. Like, he would just take, you know, maybe a 30, 45-minute nap and work 24 hours a day with little naps in there. You're saying Einstein would take 10-hour
10 hours per night. And Edison was a genius inventor, but he also had a large staff working for him. And so he was kind of working around the clock through his staff. Einstein was solitary. But anyway, the funny thing is when you're standing there next to the case full of slides of Einstein's brain, there is this sense, or at least there was for me, like maybe if I bask and whatever energy is being filtered through these cerebral components, it will somehow transmit a signal that will make me smarter. I'm kind of, you know, I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. But it was really cool to see that. Secondly, one of the things that blew my mind, and I didn't expect this, they had a whole big, long wall which had multiple shelves, and this wall was, I'm going to say, maybe 15 feet long, multiple shelves of nothing but skulls. And when you look at so many skulls, and I'm thinking maybe, I don't know, 100, 200, you see incredible variation among human skulls. Some of them look like aliens. Some look like apes. Some of them have just the strangest little knobby projections. You'd be just really surprised at how different human skulls look. You go down into one section where they actually have the tallest human skeleton in the world on display. And this is a skeleton that's probably close to 8 feet tall. standing there on display, and right next to it is the skeleton of a little person. And so you can literally look at the tallest skeleton on display in the world next to one of the littlest. Very, very bizarre. And then they had, you know, what they call the soap lady, which was pretty wild, which was a woman who they had found in Europe, and her body had sort of transformed into this strange soap-like state so that she looked waxy, and it retained a lot of her features. That was crazy. They had this model of a kid that I call the Spider Kid, and it was like two twins that were conjoined, and they had, I don't know, like four or five legs coming out. And then, yes, there was a big, large, weird, twisted-looking male member. And who knows, Sam? Maybe that has something to do with why there were, you know, so many ladies interested in
one day, that could be you.
That's what I was thinking. Who was that guy? And how much of an honor would it be to be immortalized this way? Okay, the clock has got us. We're going to take a break. Oh, boy. As if we haven't dug deep enough, the dark 30 hours coming up. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.